Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review was heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on poison drops in the federal Senate right after this. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton, for instance. Swinton said one time that there is no such thing at this date of world's history in America as an independent press. Now, you know what, and I know it. Well, Swinton replied that there is not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things, and any of you who would be so foolish as to write your honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper, before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. Now, that was Swinton's response to a time when he was a guest of honor at a banquet given to him by his craft. He was a journalist. And the guy that offered the toast didn't know Swinton and didn't know that Swinton was going to blow the whistle on the press. And he went on to say that the business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. Now, you know it, and I know it. And what folly is this toasting of an independent press? He went on to say that we're the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes, and we're the jumping jacks. They pull the strings, and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We, he said, are intellectual prostitutes. That's a pretty powerful statement. Now, these rich men that he's referring to behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of this Global 2000 program and this New World Order, the men and families like the Windsors, the Rockefellers, the Bushes, and Bundys, and Carnegies. That's why I contend it's time for us to wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, and let's prepare to live through and survive this New World Order and this Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000, Bible prophecy, and this New World Order, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package? Remember, it's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative, and best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click on to the archives page and you can download that free General Law CD package right there. Again, that's georgegordon.org. All right, we're talking about Zach Montgomery. Remember, he's the guy that wrote the book back in 1886 now, and he came up with this claim. He said, public school causes criminality, poverty, insanity, suicides, violence, and unemployment. Didn't make any apologies for it. He said, it's the cause of. Now, I showed you why it was the cause last time. We took a look at the story of the criminals in San Quentin, what happens when you go to public school. Well, a short time after this, Montgomery was interviewed. Well, I should say a short time after. It's actually a short time before this. Montgomery had been interviewed by a reporter from the Oakland, California newspaper. It was called The Mirror. And Montgomery gave him the interview, and he told him what his views were at the time. And it was astonishing. It was astounding. It was so off the wall back in the 1880s that somebody would be opposed to public education or the public school system that it warranted newspaper coverage. You know, this guy's really off the wall, a wacko. Now, I subscribe to this very same philosophy because it's the biblical philosophy. In the Bible, there is a series of statutes, a series of laws that deal with education. And our Creator told us this is the way to educate children. This is the format that you should follow, and it's the format of a legal education taught at home. It is a homeschool legal education taught by parents, parents who have a view, a worldview, and it may be different. You may be a Catholic, a Protestant, a Jew, a Mormon, or something else. And what is your view of the law of God and morality? And that's what you ought to be teaching. And even if it's wrong, you won't be infecting my kids or anybody else's. But you know, there's a problem with taking a child and putting him in public school and then teaching that child morality. And David Barton pointed that out. Let me give you an illustration of that. America to Pray or Not to Pray by David Barton. You can get a copy of this little book here. I always recommend it when we're talking about education by Wall Builder Press. Phone number is 817-441-6044. It's called America to Pray or Not to Pray. And he's got a little section in here on morality. And I'm going to read it to you. Just take a minute. And it'll set the stage here for what Zach Montgomery's interview was all about, because he said, Montgomery is a Catholic, and he doesn't make any bones about him. He was from Kentucky. He's a southern border man. Kentucky at the time was one of the parental states. That is, people choose for themselves what they want to educate their children to. The state doesn't get involved. Well, David Barton is Wall Builder Press, Post Office Box 397, Aledo, Texas, 76008. America to Pray or Not to Pray, about $12. Give them a call first, find out what the price is. And it'll tell you what's going on in the public education system today, and it's a parallel to what Zach Montgomery said was going to occur in the future in the public school system, which is exactly what was occurring from 1850 to 1880. It's just gone on from 1880 to 1980 and now to 2010. It's just more of the same, only a little bit worse. But listen to this. In 1988, California was considering adopting legislation on sex education for public schools, requiring that course material and instruction shall stress that monogamous heterosexual intercourse, one man and one woman, within marriage is a traditional American value. The senator promoting the bill received a letter of protest from the ACLU dated April 18, 1988, in which the ACLU said, "It is our position that monogamous heterosexual intercourse within marriage as a traditional American value is an unconstitutional establishment of a religious doctrine in our public schools. There are various religions which hold contrary beliefs with respect to marriage and monogamy, and we believe this bill violates the First Amendment. Students across the nation are being provided with materials in their sex education classes from groups like Planned Parenthood. Materials containing photographs, illustrations, and graphics encouraging and demonstrating premarital sexual relations for adolescents. Consider these mild excerpts from books and materials that Planned Parenthood and similar groups recommend for adolescents." Now, if you hold these views, public school is no problem. But I don't hold these views. And many other people don't hold these views. And if you wanted to bring your views into the public school, that's called religion, and you can't do that. Now, these people, sodomites, lesbians, and others, they can be witches and warlocks, they can bring their views into the public school. And if you object to that, then you're a religious lunatic. So the solution is very simple. I mean, I'm not opposed to public school. I mean, hell, have at it. I'm not here to tell you people not to participate in your public school. What I'm opposed to is this compulsory public school. And I'm here to tell you that, fortunately, here in America, there's three ways to educate your children. You can do it by homeschool, provided for in every state in the union, parochial school, provided by every state in the union, and public school, provided by every state in the union. And the state promotes public school to the exclusion of the other two. So I just wanted to come here and tell you that, no, wait a minute. You don't have to subject your children to this kind of immorality if you don't want to. And if you do, it's because you want to either do it or you want to consent to it. In other words, you don't want to resist. That's your choice. That's your choice to make. Now, students across the nation are being provided with materials in their sex education classes from groups like Planned Parenthood, and here's an example being taught in the Oakland Public Schools. In the book, it says, "Boys and Sex." That's the headline. More and more people are coming to understand that having sex is joyful and an enriching experience at any age. Playing with girls sexually before adolescence increases the chances for a satisfactory sex life when a boy grows up. Premarital intercourse does have its definite values as a training ground for marriage. Boys and girls who start having intercourse when they're adolescents will find that it's a big help. It's like taking a car out on a test run before you buy it. Girls understand now that they are far more likely to make good social and sexual adjustments to life if they learn to be warm, open, responsive, and sexually unafraid. They're learning to be sexual partners of men. Everyone's agreed. I underlined that. Everyone's agreed. Well, I want to point out that I'm not agreed, and I'm part of somebody, and so I'm sitting here telling you that's a damn lie. Everybody is not agreed. But they go on to tell you everyone's agreed that teenage sex should be a learning experience. Sex play with boys can be exciting, pleasurable, and even worthwhile, and it will help later sexual adjustment. Now, there are only two basic kinds of sex, sex with victims and sex without. Sex with victims is always wrong. I'd like to know who in the hell said that was always wrong. In other words, if God can say, "Thou shalt not commit adultery," and these people don't subscribe to that, that's obviously not right. Well, then that authority must be wrong. Well, who in hell is this authority to say that sex with victims is always wrong? I don't know of any rapists out there that believe that sex with victims is wrong. Do you? Why would they be raping people if they thought it was wrong? Come on. Sex without is always right. Sex without victims is always right. Oh, you think so? Well, what is a victim? Who makes this determination as to who the victim is or what a victim is? One way to avoid having victims is, of course, to have sexual relationships only with your friends. Sex is fun and joyful, and it comes in all types and styles, all of which are okay. Do what gives pleasure and enjoy what gives pleasure and ask for what gives pleasure. Don't rob yourself of joy by focusing on old-fashioned ideas about what's normal or nice. Don't focus on thou shalt not commit adultery now. That'll spoil your fun. The effect of these school sex ed curriculums have had on the nation since the rejection of religious principles is very apparent. By prohibiting student access to religious principles, the court has prohibited student access to the principles which produce morality. And on the following graphs, notice the unusually strong correlation between the court's decisions to prohibit student access to religious principles while at school and the dramatic changes in student morality. That's on page 28 and 29 of David Barton's book on America to Pray or Not to Pray, which sets the stage here for what Zach Montgomery was pointing out clear back here in the 1880s. Now, he said that morality over here, you can't teach in the public schools because it's going to offend the sensitivities of the people who are the Catholics, Protestants, and Jews. So on page 60, public school compulsory education, social aid, and the interview on page 73. Let me see if I can find page 73 here. Here's the interview. Morality is on page 65. So let me flip ahead here just a little bit, one more page. And Montgomery points this out. This is back now in the 1880s. He says, Section 1702 of our California school law provides, among other things, that it shall be the duty of all teachers to endeavor to impress upon the minds of the pupils the principles of morality. Well, now, just what is morality? In the case of the Planned Parenthood people, and God love them, you know, people that belong to Planned Parenthood have a right to their views. But let me ask you this. Does Planned Parenthood have a right to impress their views upon you and me and everybody else against our beliefs, against our desires? You see, Planned Parenthood was objecting to you and me bringing Thou Shalt Not Commit Adultery into the public school, alleging that this is morality. They didn't want the Ten Commandments in the Bible and prayer and God in the public school. Now, when we had morality in the public school, when we had God, when we had some form of morality, it was offensive to other members of the religious community, and probably rightfully so. If you'll stop to think about it, let's send your children to the public school, and there are some Jewish parents. Would they object, maybe, to your Protestant or Catholic Christian morality being interjected into the public school? Would you object to the Jewish morality being injected into the public school, or the Muslims, or so on? And the answer to that is, well, yes, that was the biggest complaint. As time wore on, as more and more people immigrated to the United States, you get more and more Jews, more and more Muslims, you know, more and more of this and that. Another thing, pretty soon, you know, saying, hey, wait a minute. How come you Christians are enforcing your morality on us, and we're from Vietnam, or we're from China, or we're from someplace else? Well, by 1962, the thing came to a head. There were enough people like Planned Parenthood and ACLU and others that the issue of this morality in public schools got in, or religion in public schools. And so the courts gave us a series of cases, and that's what David Barton's writing about in his book on America to Pray, Not to Pray. And they gave us a series of cases, and they banned the Bible. Well, they banned the Koran, too, you know. You can't bring the Koran in there. And they banned prayer, so you can't have Muslim prayers or Jewish prayers or anybody else's prayer in public school, and perhaps that makes all the sense in the world. But now you see the atheists and the agnostics and the others, and that's their religion. Their anti-religion is their religion. Now, they've brought theirs in, and so let me ask you this. You Muslims, you Jews, you Catholics, you Christians, and Confucianists, and etc. Let me ask you this. Do you believe that bringing Planned Parenthood's philosophy into the public school, teaching your 14-year-old girl daughter to be a whore and your 14-year-old son to be a pimp for the other boys in the class, you know, lining up, you know, some girls, you know, for tonight's party, is what you believe in as a form of morality? And you see, here's where your problem comes in. Planned Parenthood says, well, we think this is the greatest thing since sliced white bread. And I don't blame them. So do I. When I was 14 years old, if I could have been out here gangbanging and having sex, you know, with all the girls in class and the school's passing out condoms over here to keep them from getting pregnant, I would have thought that was the greatest thing since sliced white bread. Now, whether or not that's good for 14-year-olds, you know, is something that parents try to determine. And we try to determine that along with school teachers, and I'm sure there are a lot of school teachers out there that would say, well, I don't agree with this. Well, somebody agrees with it because it's part and parcel with the school curriculum, sex education. So there's a solution to all of this, and the solution is, if you don't like it, pull your kid out of the public school. So if you've been brainwashed into believing that I have to send them to public school and there's no other options, you know, well, rest assured there are two other options. Now, whether or not you want to avail yourself of those other options, you know, that's a choice that people have to make. I had to make it, and so I did, and I'm not happy with the decision that I made. I sent my kids to public school, and I think that was a mistake. I put them in private school to start with. I should have kept them there. And I educated some of them. I mean, I had a bunch. And so some of them I educated at home. Some of them I educated in parochial school. And some of them I sent to public school. Those were decisions that I had to make, and I made them. And I think now, looking back on it, I should have educated all of my children in home school and left out that public option altogether. So that's what you get from hindsight. It's 2020. Now, Zach Montgomery, taking a page out of our 56 signers of the Declaration, all of the signers of the Declaration of Independence were homeschooled or parochial schooled. None of them attended public school. All of these men were well-educated, spoke several foreign languages, were scientists, writers, statesmen, educators, politicians, businessmen. Now, there are two opposing sides to this issue of public versus private education. Two opposing sides to it. Now, one of the two sides has succeeded. They've won, hands down. The public education side has won. They now have about 50 million students in the public education system, and the parochial and homeschoolers, they have about 8 million. So out of about 60 million people in round number going to public school or private school or homeschool, only about 16%, you know, in round numbers, are actually going to the two alternatives. And the 84% going to public school, they've got the game won, as far as that's concerned. When it comes to turning out the voters for the future and the course and direction of the nation for the future, I mean, they've got it hands down. And that was what this battle was all about to start with. The point or the purpose of public school is to gain control over the minds and direction of the political course of the nation. That's what it's all about. That's what the game is for. And now that they've won it, they have now turned the nation from a republic to a democracy to a proletariat. And they've turned us into a communist, socialist, welfare state. From what we were to what we became and what we are today has been the result of public education. And it has worked. It has succeeded beyond their wildest expectations. Well, now there's an outcome that comes from that. You know, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. You want to teach free sex in public school? Fine. You know, no. I don't want to get in the way of your happiness and success here, but there's going to be an outcome that comes from that. And the outcome is immorality. Well, immorality, as you view morality. You know, if you're a Christian and you're sending your daughter to public school, she comes home with some condoms and says she's going out to a party because she wants to get laid, you know, that may violate your Baptist or your Methodist or your Christian morals or values, but, you know, that's your decision. You sent her there to public school. You sent her there to be educated to the morality of the state, which is secular humanism. You know, maybe you intended that she turn out to be a Baptist or a Mormon or something else, but, you know, she's in school here with all of her friends, her peer pressure, the textbooks, who ridicule you, the parents, and tell the students that they ought to listen to the teachers and the state and not to the parents and the church. And so you get what you bought. You know, that's what you wanted to buy. That's what you're going to get. Now, my point is this. Zach Montgomery comes along and he says, hey, listen, I think this is wrong. I think parents should make these choices. Now, if you're a parent and you decide to send your kid to public school so that you can teach sex education in public school based upon the morality of Planned Parenthood, that's your choice. That's your decision. But if you happen to be a Catholic, Protestant, or Jew and you have a different mindset or viewpoint concerning sexual education or morality, why don't you exercise that? All you Jewish people out there, if you're opposed to this, why don't you educate your sons and your daughters in your own school? That's a choice that you have to make, and it's provided for in your state statutes. Irrespective of what your social lady is telling you and your school teachers are telling you, every state in this country. Furthermore, you people in Canada and Australia and Europe, you've also got options. All Anglo-Saxons around the world have options. I can't tell you what they are in Scotland or Wales, but you know that this thing of educating your children to this perversion is not something that you can't overcome. Now, Montgomery was interviewed. In his interview here, it's only about 3-4 pages here, I thought it was right to the point. And he answered the questions, I thought, very, very well. Listen to this. The following is from the Oakland, California Mirror for December of 1881. So before he was nominated and before he got into this controversy here with the Senate, he was interviewed here. And last week, Mr. Montgomery returned to Oakland from San Diego, where he recently purchased a ranch and was soon called upon by our reporter on educational matters, who informed him that General Eaton, United States Commissioner of Education, had recently been in Oakland and stated that he had heard in Washington of an anti-public school man in California named Zach Montgomery, and that he should like to know more of him and his peculiar views. I want to underline his peculiar views. Because if you hold a view opposite to or anti-public school, you are peculiar, which is pretty good, because in the Bible, the word peculiar appears about 8 times, as I recall. 8 times. In which God identified the people who follow the Ten Commandments and the statutes and the laws and the judgments of God in the Scripture, he calls those people peculiar. God himself says, I have reserved you to be a peculiar people unto myself. So I think the word peculiar is apropos. And that he had exacted a promise from him, the reporter, to interview this odd Californian and to send him a copy of such an interview. "Well, sit down," said Mr. Montgomery to the reporter, and the reporter returned thanks and seated himself, and with pencil and notebook in hand, and after learning, incidentally, that his hospitable host was a native of Nelson County, Kentucky, the interview then opened vigorously and ran as follows. The reporter said, "Now, Mr. Montgomery, have you any objection to answering a few questions relative to your object in withdrawing from the legal profession and devoting yourself to the agitation of the school question and the progress which that agitation is making?" Mr. Montgomery responded. He said, "No, none in the world. This agitation concerns the public, and the public has a right to know all about it." And the reporter responded, "Is it true, sir, that your object is to procure a division of the public school funds upon what is called a sectarian basis, upon a plan similar to that once proposed by Archbishop Hughes of New York?" Mr. Montgomery said, "No, sir, that is not true. And I will further state that while I am a firm believer in the doctrines and teachings of my own church, the Catholic Church, I now am and always have been totally opposed upon principle to the state's taxing any class of its citizens to pay for teaching anybody's children any kind of doctrines or principles touching the subject of religion, either pro or con, when the citizens thus taxed or any of them do not believe in the doctrine so taught." Now that's precisely what the U.S. Supreme Court's conclusion was back in 1962. That's what the ACLU is claiming here in April of 1988, when they said, "It is our position that monogamous heterosexual intercourse within marriage as a traditional American value is an unconstitutional establishment of a religious doctrine in public schools. There are various religions which hold contrary beliefs with respect to marriage and monogamy, and we believe this bill violates the First Amendment." Well, I couldn't agree more. I think the ACLU is exactly correct. Shucks, I'm not opposed to Planned Parenthood or the ACLU. After all, they have the same right to their views concerning morality that you and I and everybody else do. What I'm objecting to is Planned Parenthood and the ACLU bringing their religious ideologies into the public schools, which they have now done. They didn't like mine, and so they threw me and my religious ideologies and my morality, that was the Bible and the Ten Commandments, out. Okay. Then they replaced them with their morality. Well, shucks. If my morality is no good, what in hell makes you think that their morality is any better than mine? So Montgomery's position is the same libertarian view. He says, well, listen, we shouldn't be taxing people like Jews and then forcing them under penalty of law to send their children to this public school to have them indoctrinated in moral principles that they're objecting to. And that goes for Catholics and Protestants and Mormons and everybody else. So if you're sitting here saying, well, this sounds kind of crazy to me, think about it in more pragmatic terms. If we're going to ban this morality, if we're going to ban the Bible, well, shouldn't we ban Planned Parenthood and their morality also? I mean, if you're going to ban the Christians from the public schools, shouldn't you ban the witches from the public schools also? Isn't witchcraft a religious ideology? Hey, it's halfway time here. I've got to give you a reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, not state schools and all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log, schedule, and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. Download that free general law CD package off of our archives page, georgegordon.org. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or this local radio station. And if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're reviewing the book. It's called The Poison Drops in the Federal Senate. Let me tell you where you can get a copy of it. It's published by St. Thomas Press. It's a reprint, St. Thomas Press, Post Office Box 35096. That's Post Office Box 35096, Houston, Texas, 77235. Their first printing was in 1968, second was in 1983. Now, they might not even be in business at this juncture of time. So then we have to do some detective work here to find books like this. And the first place that I start is with BraveNewBookstore.com. And then that's because BraveNewBookstore.com, located in Austin, Texas, specializes in finding these kinds of politically incorrect and religiously incorrect books. So if you're looking for one of these crazy off-the-wall kinds of books and treatises, etc., you'll find it more likely than not at Brave New Bookstore. Their phone number is 512-480-2503. Once more, that's area code 512-480-2503. Now you're looking for the school question. It's called Poison Drops in the Federal Senate. The school question, and the author was Zach, Z-A-C-H, Montgomery, M-O-N-T-G-O-M-E-R-Y. First published in 1886 by Gibson Brothers, Printers and Bookbinders, Gibson Brothers, 1886. We're on chapter 11 over here. Let me see if I can flip back over here and find it. There's chapter 12. Oh, shucks, page 73, I think it was. Am I right? Yep, reporter sat down. Here's where we were, page 74. Now, the reporter said, well, then will you be good enough, sir, for the benefit of the readers of the Mirror, to give me a brief outline of your true position on the educational question? Montgomery said, certainly, sir, since you desire it. My views in brief I keep as standing matter on the last page of my review, The Family Defender, epitomized in the shape of seven short propositions, which are substantially as follows. First, I maintain in the first place that the cost of educating children, just like the cost of feeding and clothing them, is a debt which every parent owes to his own children, and that it is as unjust to take one man's money with which to educate the children of another who is able to educate them himself, as it would be to take one man's money to buy food and clothes for children whose parents have the means wherewith to feed and clothe them. Hence, I contend that education at public expense ought to be limited to those children whose parents are unable to educate them. And I further contend that as a rule, education, when at public expense, should be restricted to the elementary English branches, coupled with such an industrial education as will fit the party educated to earn an honest living. And I believe also that the whole business of teaching school should be thrown open to private enterprise and free competition, just like practicing law or medicine or running a shoe factory. And then I would allow every parent who is deemed fit to be the guardian of his own children to select the particular school wherein they are to be educated. And I would have, as our only school officers, one or more examiners, either elected or appointed for such district, whose duty it should be to periodically examine in the legally appointed secular branches all such pupils as are being taught at public expense, and to report upon the value of the teacher's services as indicated by the progress of his pupils, so that he might be paid according to that value. And I would have no questions asked as to whether the teachers were Catholics, Protestants, Jews, or free thinkers, or whether, in addition to the secular training given at public expense, these same teachers had either gratuitously or at private expense, and at the request of parents, given religious instructions to any or all of their pupils. Now, the reporter asked, well, by limiting education at public expense to the common English branches, would not many of our brightest youths be deprived of the possibility of obtaining such an education, as is at all in keeping with their talents, and the state thereby be made the loser? Well, Montgomery said, I said, as a rule, education when at public expense should be thus limited. But most general rules, you know, have their exceptions, and in this case I would make an exception in favor of such youths as possess extraordinary talent for any particular science coupled with corresponding degrees of merit. Reporter, but where and how could you draw the line between those parents who are and who are not able to educate their children at their own expense? Montgomery responded, well, there are many ways of drawing this line, but in the absence of a better way, I would suggest that the law be so framed as to require every parent who has children of school age and who is worth a given sum per child to be educated over and above his debts and liabilities, exclusive of property exempt from education, to educate his own children at his own expense, and to allow all parents worth less than the designated sum to have their children educated at the public expense. In this way, the assessor's returns could be made to settle the question as to who are and who are not able to educate their own children. Let me pause right here and make an observation for you. Now listen up. Let me show you something. Here in the United States, we are now today expending $10,700 per student in our public school system. If we just left our tax base exactly the way it is, don't change anything. Evidently, we're all satisfied with the education system the way it is right now, aren't we? Now watch this. It only costs $546 per student per year. Let's double that to $1,000, okay? Let's allow every child in America $1,000, which is less than a tenth of what it's costing right now in public school. And let us leave the same bureaucracy in place that we have right now, and let them disperse to every child in America $1,000 with the instruction to their parents, now go educate this kid, you got the money. That means Bill Gates has to educate somebody else's kid, and I have to educate somebody else's kid, but I'll tell you what that would do. I don't think it's right that you should take my money to educate your kid, but hell, that's what you're doing already. And the $10,700, which is 10 times as much as it's going to cost me under this plan, is producing a bad result. Now let me show you how to get a good result. The average homeschooled child is not being educated by a parent who has a teaching degree or a certificate. And it's just Joe Sixpack who's buying something on the market. There are, I'm going to say dozens, there may be hundreds, but there are at least dozens of all kinds of computer and curriculums. I mean, you parents out there have a choice. If you want to educate your kid to Baptist theology, the Baptists have all kinds of educational programs for you Baptists. Lutherans do the same thing, Catholics do that, Mormons do it, everybody does it. And if you're not religious and you just want to give your kid a secular education with no religion, hell, there's educational programs, homeschool programs for the non-religious. Now, that'll force me to pay for educating your kid. And let's suppose that you're a Mormon and you get a $1,000 check from the government, the Department of Education. You got five kids, so you get five checks for $1,000 each. And you can go out and buy the best homeschooling programs that money can buy at my expense, and then educate your kid to your own morality. And it'll save me $9,000 in the process. I mean, that's how simple this is. There's no big mystery. Furthermore, let's put the shoe on the other foot. Let's suppose that as a parent, you're so damn lazy that hair grows on the palms of your hands, okay? You're just as lazy as sin. And by God, you're just absolutely not going to take your time, effort, and energy to educate your kid with my money at my expense to your own moral standards. All right? Terrific. Let's put the job on somebody else's back. Go ahead and tax me. Tax me $2,500, because that's what the average parochial school education in America costs, $2,500. Let's double it to $5,000. Let's give all the Catholic school teachers a raise. Let's take all the parochial schools in America and double the teacher's salary, and at my expense and the expense of everybody else in the country, leave the public education system just where it's at. And take $5,000 out of my money and Bill Gates and everybody else and send you the check for your kid. How's that, Mormon? And there you are in Provo, Utah, and you get a check courtesy of George Gordon from the Department of Education for $5,000 for every kid in your family so that you can send them to your own Mormon school, for crying out loud. How's that for a plan? You pick the school. And you don't have to take a minute to educate your kid. Just, you know, send your kid to whatever school you want to on my dime. And you know what that'll do for me? Save me half. It'll cut the education cost of America from $500 billion a year to $250. Now, they got a woman over here, pretty good school administrator, too, I think, from what I see in the news. She's a Korean lady. I think her name is Ray or Ree, something like that. She's up in Washington, D.C. She's working with the mayor, black mayor there in Washington, D.C. And she's trying to straighten out the public school system there in Washington, D.C. And then I've said, you know, good luck, lady. God, I wish you the best. But, you know, you're fighting against the teachers' union, and you're fighting against the powers that be. And I think it's a losing cause, and I think ultimately she's going to fail. But, you know, God love her. I wish her the best. And in those inner-city public schools, it isn't $10,700. Hell, it's $14,000, $18,000, and $22,000 per student per year to educate them to the 28th percentile. Not only does it cost twice or three times as much to educate them, but turn out dumber. Now, let's look at this pragmatically. Let's take a black inner-city lady with three kids in Washington, D.C., and she's sending her kids today to a crummy school. And this school administrator, this Korean lady, is trying to straighten it out. And God love her. You know, we wish them all the best. But let's solve the problem. It's very simple. You just take the same amount of money. Got that? Same amount of money. And just write the check out to the mother. Take the Korean lady out of it. Take the mayor out of it. Take the politics out of it. Just leave the establishment there. Just enact the law and just send this welfare mother a check for $15,000, $5,000 for each of her three kids, and say, here's the money, lady. Now go out and educate your kid any damn way you want to. Isn't that crazy? I know. Sounds dumb. And it will cost you and I, the taxpayers, half. She can send them to the Catholic school. She can send them to the Lutheran school. She can send them to any damn school she wants. She can educate them at home. She could educate the kids at home for $546 a year. That's what I paid for all the educational material that I had here for a high school girl. And put the rest of it in her pocket and spend it on crack cocaine if she wants to. What the hell do we care how she spends the money? But let the mother, let the parent educate her own child to the standards that she wants. What the hell's wrong with that? What is wrong with letting parents decide how they want their children educated? Now, the only people that are opposed to that are the public schools and the public school unions and the administration, and it's very logical. I mean, I'm not down on you public school teachers. I understand your dilemma. You have an axe to grind and an agenda to fulfill, and you have a mortgage to pay and bread snappers to feed, just like all the rest of us, and you need the job, don't you? And you public school teachers are getting paid double or triple what the parochial school teachers are getting paid. And you sure as hell don't want to take a pay cut and have to lower your standard of living to the same as the Catholic or the teacher. You know, we're here in the Lutheran school. But let's understand something here, boys and girls, and that is this. A politician is an elected entrepreneur. Entrepreneur. An entrepreneur is a businessman who's in business for himself. I, George Gordon, am an entrepreneur. I'm a private entrepreneur. I'm a businessman with totally selfish interests. I'm just here working for myself. I don't give a rat's rectum about anybody else, just me. I'm only concerned about me, the big I. All right? Now, a politician is an entrepreneur, but he's a public entrepreneur. I'm a private entrepreneur, and Kit Bond, my senator here from Missouri, he is a public entrepreneur. Then there are bureaucrats. These are people who are appointed to office, you know, like the Commissioner of Education, people who are appointed to various offices in the bureaucracy. These are bureaucrats, and a bureaucrat is an unelected entrepreneur. He's in business. Bureaucracy is a business. Politics is a business. These people are there to make money. That's the way they make their living. You're a plumber. You're a carpenter. You're an electrician. That's the way you make your living. A politician makes his living as a politician. He is an entrepreneur, just like you and I and everybody else. Now, school teachers are entrepreneurs also, public entrepreneurs. They're a part of a bureaucracy. This bureaucracy gets paid double what all the rest of us get paid. And God love them, I don't blame a school teacher who's getting paid twice as much as a Catholic nun for doing the same work. God love her. If you can do that and get away with it, I don't blame you. Get after it. But not at my expense. I don't want to pay for that. I want you to get out there and kick and scratch just like I do and just like everybody else and compete in the marketplace just like I do and everybody else has to do out here in the private sector. And I'm opposed to this gravy train that's going on out here. It's like Los Angeles is bankrupt and they got a $222 million deficit. Well, the federal government in the final analysis is going to print the money and go out there and bail them out. That's going to happen. You can rest assured that California is not going to go bankrupt. The federal government, at your expense, boys and girls, is going to print the money and send it to Sacramento. They're not going to default on their bonds. But now the rest of us out here who are working for around, you know, $40,000 a year have to subsidize those firefighters and policemen and others that are making $80,000 a year. Got that? And school teachers and all the rest. Now, I don't know why we have to work for half pay to subsidize these people over here at full pay and spend all this money in depressed times and run around here without jobs and struggling to make ends meet when it's pretty damn obvious over here that freedom of choice and freedom in the marketplace would solve everybody's problem. Now, of course, the fat cats that are collecting the $80,000 public pensions and public benefits over here, they're not going to give up without a fight, and I'm not even in the fight. I just dropped out of the tax system and the Social Security system and the Obama Medicare system years ago. I'm not going to participate in public medical socialized medicine. If the rest of you want to do that, God love you, get after it. If you want to participate in Social Security, welfare, and food stamps, hell, don't let me dissuade you. But there's no money in it, and there's a better way. It's called the Ten Commandment model, and I've been talking about that for years. And when God gave Moses the Ten Commandments at Mount Sinai, he gave him 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments all at the same time. I don't know if you knew that or not, but if you didn't, now you do. And he wrote the Ten Commandments on stone, and he wrote the rest of the statutes on parchment. And they stuck it in the Ark of the Covenant. It's a different ark. It's not the same one that Noah, you know, had all the animals on. It was the second ark. It was a box covered with gold, a pretty valuable box, kind of like a cedar chest. And then they stuck all of these mementos in there. They stuck Aaron's rod in there and Moses' rod and the parchment and two tables of stone. It was kind of like, you know, here in the United States, our treasures are the Declaration of Independence and our Constitution. And we've got those in the Capitol Rotunda in Washington, D.C., and they've got them in special boxes, you know, to keep them, you know, from deteriorating. Well, that's exactly what Moses did and the Israelites did. They stuck all of their very valuable national treasures, their founding documents, the Ten Commandments and the Statutes and Judgments, and they stuck them in a box, carried it around with them. Built a big building called the Temple and stuck them inside there and put them in the Holy of Holies. And so, you know, people do that. You French people do that. You've got yours sitting over there in your Parliament building. You know, you've got your famous documents. The English do, and everybody does that. And every one of these governments, every one of these gods over here is a competing force against the God of creation. And the people that are running these governments, the politicians, are competing with the God of creation. That's what the bottom line is. And that's what the argument and the fight is over. It's to gain your loyalty so that you will be loyal to France and to the political establishment there and pay your tithes, pay your taxes to these usurpers called politicians and bureaucrats instead of to the Levites and the Aaronic priests. That's all you're really dealing with here. You're just dealing with some competitors. It's market share is what we're after. God originally had the whole market share. And, you know, everybody looked at that and said, well, these Levites have the whole market share, and we don't like that. And so what we want to do is we want to set up a loyal opposition over here. You'll see that in, I think it was Numbers, chapter 18 or something. It was called Korah's Rebellion. I'll have to look that up for you. Hey, I'm running out of time. I'm going to have to give you a final reminder here that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School. And The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement.